Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
We're all trying to be happier from day to day, but as it happens, in order to be happy, we need to learn how to be sad. My next guest is a best-selling author, a journalist, a speaker and host, and after 8 years of researching happiness, has written a brilliant book. It's called How to Be Sad. Helen Russell is on the line. Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks so much, Jen. How are you?
I find this a really interesting topic because we're all in that state of avoidance with sadness. We don't, especially Irish people, we don't like talking about it. We don't like admitting to it. But can you tell us why you began to research happiness and sadness?
Yeah, so I was living and working in London, and I thought I was sort of fine living the city dream. But then my husband was offered his dream job working for Lego in Denmark, and Denmark had just been voted the happiest country on earth. So with my journalist hat on, I thought, oh, I'll investigate this. So I wrote a book about living in this happiest country, and it was published all over the world, and I started to hear from people all over sharing their own experiences of happiness. And I started to notice that people I spoke to were so obsessed with the pursuit of happiness that they were quite almost phobic of being sad. So people would ask, I'd do events, people would ask, so why aren't I happy, at times when maybe they'd just been made redundant or they lost loved ones. And I thought, this is crazy. Why are we so obsessed with happiness and so scared of being sad? So that was the beginning for me.
Okay. And just quick one on the Danish. Why are they so happy?
Oh, that's the question. So there's a lot to do with the trust, the welfare state. There's less inequality because everyone's paying these crazy high taxes. So there's lower crime because people aren't robbing each other to put food on the table by and large. They have this short working week, and they have coming into winter. I mean, the weather's terrible. It's certainly not the weather, but they have this hygge, this idea of these comforting moments of togetherness. So they just kind of have a really good lifestyle, and the structural things are there as well. Like the government's kind of looking out for you in the Nordic countries, okay, which is nice. Bit of a change.
But this is fascinating research. As you said yourself there, we're all so hung up on the pursuit of happiness. But it isn't necessarily a good thing. When you were doing this research, you talk about crying. What did you learn about crying and its function?
So interesting, because for years people thought crying had no function. Charles Darwin would swear blind that crying was no use whatsoever. But actually, scientists now know that it's not that we're sluicing out any toxins when we cry. It's that crying is a social expression of our sadness. So it lets other people know that we are sad, and we feel better afterwards. So it is a stress relief. It does help us feel better, and it communicates our sadness to other people. So all of these elements of sadness that typically, or traditionally rather, people might frown on or say, oh, don't be sad, don't cry, to kids even, we still say it. They all serve really useful purpose, and it was helpful to get back to that.
There seems to be a taboo around sadness in this part of the world, doesn't it? Does it all go back to that kind of language that we were told as kids? And, you know, you mentioned a few there. Was there more to it than that?
Yeah, there's a lot to do with, I think, in the UK, there's a lot to do with the stiff upper lip and World War II. But also there's been a really big change in more recent years. We, in the medical profession, a lot of people take influence from the US and the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. They used to have sadness as a normal thing. So if, for example, you were grieving, if someone died, you couldn't be diagnosed with depression within 2 months of bereavement. But the latest version got rid of that in 2013. They scrapped that. So actually sadness, normal sadness, when something doesn't go our way, when we suffer a loss or disappointment, has now been pathologized. They've now made it a medical thing. And that's a real problem because, as you say, sadness is natural. It's going to happen. Mm. The cost of avoiding it, people have found now, is very detrimental to our mental health. Suppressing our thoughts or our negative emotions puts ourselves at greater risk of it tipping over into something more serious. And actually, there are some benefits to being sad, like the crying. So researchers from the University of New South Wales found that accepting and allowing for temporary sadness, it improves our attention to detail, it increases perseverance, it makes us more generous, makes us more grateful for what we've got, and it helps us be more clear-eyed, which I love. We're less likely to fall for the halo effect, whereby we think the very beautiful and very rich can do no wrong, or the fundamental attribution error, where we think that everyone is out to get us. We become very defensive. When we're sad, we're essentially nicer, kinder, people. So it's worth kind of sitting in that emotion when we feel it.
So, because my husband, he won't watch a sad movie or read a sad book. He's like, he feels it doesn't benefit him. But you're saying there's huge benefits to maybe immersing yourself in that from time to time.
From time to time, yeah. I mean, a lot of people find cultural outlets or art or movies as an outlet, a bit of a good stepping stone to going there when we're feeling it ourselves. It kind of feels more okay, doesn't it? Like we cry on planes at films. There's that thing of being alone and you can almost mm-hmm. put some of that emotion on the art. But actually, yeah, I mean, as I say, it's quite a modern thing being this obsessed with happiness and fearful of sadness. And it doesn't happen all over the world, which kind of just shows again that it's us. It's not the idea of sadness itself. It's that we have all been conditioned in a way, as I said, like children told, don't cry or get up, it'll be okay, rather than sitting with that emotion for a while and then letting it pass. And you see in men in particular, men who haven't been allowed to express their sadness will often pick maybe anger from the bookshelf of emotions when they are actually sad. I know my husband, if something goes wrong, then the shed will get a good shouting to, rather than in fact looking at what it is that he's perhaps disappointed about or frustrated about. So there is a bit of a gender difference in there as well.
Okay. Psychologically, is there a formula for happiness?
Well, I mean, that's again the million-dollar question. I think there is, you know, the researchers study happiness by looking at how happy people are with their lives overall and with their lives right now. And the factors that have an impact on that are things like community, our mental and physical health, the government we're living under, healthcare, education, accessibility of childcare, trust, all the things that Nordic countries do quite well on. But we also have individual capacity for happiness, and that's down to three things: our genetics, our environment, and our lifestyle. So we can't usually control the first two, but the last we can. So there's something there that we do have some autonomy and some control over. And we know what doesn't make us happy. We know that prioritizing money and perfectionism and working too hard doesn't make us happy. So yeah, there are absolutely things that we can do, but also life will blindside us. I mean, bad things happen to good people, and stressful things will happen to all of us. So it's helpful to kind of be okay with being sad, so you know how to deal with it when it inevitably comes along.
You're the first person I've ever met or spoken to who's said this. Like, it's okay to be sad. We're so conditioned in the Western world. We're so in Ireland in particular, because we're so bad at showing our emotions. Now, what if you lived with someone who's never cried? Would that be a major red flag to you? Like, how would you feel about that if you've never seen that person shed a tear?
Purely hypothetically, I mean, I think it would be interesting to rent the saddest movies you can and see what happens there. I think if that person is male, for example, I think I always take a lot of inspiration when I was looking at different cultural approaches to emotions around the world. In Maori culture, for example, you know, we think of maybe the All Blacks, these sort of big, tough guys playing rugby. But actually in Maori culture, strength and showing emotions are one and the same. It's much more accepted to be sad and happy. It's much more accepted in East Asian culture that you can be sad and happy at the same time. In Japan, they did lots of work with psychologists about whether how many people were coming to see psychologists because they were sad. It was maybe more of a melancholy. We're not talking about clinical depression here, but and the Japanese psychologists were saying, well, it never occurred to us to medicalize this sadness or try to get rid of it because it never occurred to us that it was a problem. So it's very culturally situated, and I think it's helpful to
blaming the Americans.
See examples from around the world.
Are we blaming the Americans on this? Because they have,
I mean, we can nudge towards them, obviously. It's called the DSM-5, the last one. But you know, I think there's been a big thing as well of historically using humour, I think, as a defence mechanism. And yeah, I'm all for that. It's one of the better ones, better than, you know, alcohol or whatever other crutch of choice people might have. But and it's part of what makes, you know, Irish humour so great, and the same in parts of England, I feel, from my experience. But I think we also do have to acknowledge that, yeah, you can make jokes at the funeral, but also taking a moment to be sad. Otherwise, it's just going to bite you on the bum later on.
It does. It does, Helen. It bites us on the arse. I mean, we have the best funerals in the world. They are the best crack. I'm telling you, because we're all hiding our emotions and telling joke after joke and just covering it all up and sweeping it under the carpet like we love to do. But it's a fascinating read. It's a really interesting conversation. And I hope the next generation will be more in tune with that feeling. And let's let our kids be sad and let them have that cry and maybe have a little cry ourselves. Helen Russell, really interesting stuff. I love the book. Thank you so much for joining us today. That was Helen Russell. How to Be Sad is the book. You can get it now.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.